Welcome to World Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C. And now, with the end of summer, the pace of world events, the unfolding of this unprecedented crisis, this is all accelerating at the present time. Now, let's start with the great task of organizing an anti-war left opposition against Obama. This is indispensable. If it's only right-wing teabaggers hogging all the media attention, and indeed these loudmouth Republican operatives that have infiltrated the teabag parties as well as the town halls, this will not lead to an adequate result. It's necessary for others, anti-war forces in particular, to be heard, and it would be desirable for the anti-war forces to come forward with an actual New Deal economic program to counter the Austrian school nonsense that often emerges in these town halls, thanks to the fact that the crowds are seated with Republican operatives. It would also be necessary to counter the Malthusianism of the Obama administration, their obsessive commitment to zero growth, and in particular, one of our continuing concerns, to block the Waxman-Markey cap-and-trade, cap-and-tax carbon monstrosity, which is still sitting in the Congress. And we'll get to economics in just a minute. But organizing in first place, Cindy Sheehan has had a very successful week on Martha's Vineyard. This was the only visible protest going on there. And Cindy Sheehan, I think, has saved the honor and indeed the existence of the anti-war movement by going there. You remember 4 years ago, Cindy Sheehan had gone to Crawford, Texas, to protest Mad Dog Bush the Younger, who was then in his rented ranch there, not the ranch he intended to keep, but a kind of a ranch that he had for cinematographic purposes. It was a prop. So she went to Crawford, Texas, and protested him, and by the end of the summer, she had 1,700 candlelight vigils with several hundred thousand people. A huge movement, much, much bigger than anything we've seen this year in terms of sheer numbers. Now, this time she is back and essentially has created this Camp Casey in honor of her son who lost his life in Iraq in this illegal and unconstitutional war. And she has now been able to make the transition to putting Obama in the same class with Bush, which is where he belongs. Obama, of course, committed running as the most right-wing, the most warmonger candidate in the entire Democratic field. Indeed, in some ways, Obama was the biggest warmonger on the political scene, because when Obama demanded in that famous Democratic candidates debate in July 2007, Soldier Field, Chicago, Obama demanded the unilateral bombing of Pakistan. It was unbelievable. Without regard to the Pakistan government, kill Pakistanis on site, on their own territory, without even notifying their government. You'll remember Hillary Clinton said, no, it's too much. McCain said, no, it's too much. And indeed, Mad Dog Bush the Younger himself said, no, I do everything with my friend Musharraf. And of course, then through the power shift, the behind the scenes creeping coup by the head creep Brzezinski, Nye, Huntington, the late Huntington now, and others, they were able to implement the policy even though Bush and Cheney were still in the White House. So Iran was not bombed, but Pakistan was. And that's worse, dear friends, Pakistan being twice as big with real nuclear weapons and real intermediate-range ballistic missiles, none of which Iran has, according to anybody's calculation. So, Cindy Sheehan putting the focus on Obama, one of her releases. The first day Obama got there, he went out on the golf links, cavorting with his rich, elitist Wall Street friends. In particular, one guy called Robert Wolf, who was part of Obama's foursome. Robert Wolf is the head of the Union Bank of Switzerland Investment Bank. In other words, a hedge fund run by Union Bank of Switzerland. one of the most bankrupt institutions in the world. There's a whole bailout engineered by the Swiss government to bail out the rotten derivatives of UBS, and not just of the Swiss government, because you, dear American taxpayers, have coughed up $5 billion with a B for the survival of Union Bank of Switzerland, UBS, and this hedge fund, which is undoubtedly one of the ones that makes the big losses. This was done under the AIG bailout, as you'll recall. You'll remember that the Federal Reserve, through Maiden Lane 1, Maiden Lane 2, and other vehicles, convoyed $180 billion of public funds into the bankrupt insurance company, including medical insurance, by the way, health insurance, AIG, and along with $12 or $13 billion that went to Deutsche Bank, $12 or $13 billion that went to Societe Generale, $5 or $6 billion to Barclays Bank of Britain. Some money also went to one of the Dutch banks. Union Bank of Switzerland, UBS, got $5 billion of U.S. taxpayer money. And now Obama, rather than hiding that, as you think he would, flaunts it. He cavorts out on the golf links of Martha's Vineyard with the rich elitist Robert Wolf of Union Bank of Switzerland Investment Division, in effect, a hedge fund hyena and Wall Street lamprey. Cindy Sheehan's comment to this was, while Obama was playing golf with his rich friends, four GIs died in Afghanistan. And this puts it, I think, the entire tragedy, the horror of the Obama regime in a nutshell. Total Wall Street control, total contempt for the fate of the U.S. population, especially the working people that Obama hates. There's no way around it. He hates them, white and black, blue collar, any kind of blue collar. He hates them because they are a threat to his notions of status and the social order. So Cindy Sheehan, hard at work. There's a yacht that has been put at her service by a very fine person who is a supporter. It's a 106-foot custom sloop. It's the kind of thing, it's about the size of one of the J-boats that used to compete in the America's Cup back in the 1920s and 30s. You remember Sir Thomas Lipton had a J-boat and some others came out with these huge boats, right? These are boats that have to be, that are able to sail across the Atlantic on their own bottoms, as it was once said. So the peace sloop, Camp Casey afloat, SS Camp Casey, is now a focus for the meeting. She's had a very successful press conference attended by a number of television networks. White House press corps came over, given the absolute dearth of news. And on Saturday, that is to say, Saturday the 29th of August, there's an all-day peace camp going on at Martha's Vineyard. This is a place called Ocean Park, Oak Bluffs on the name of the town on Martha's Vineyard. That's all day Saturday. And then 8 p.m., some people may hear this if you're in Boston at 6 p.m. and you hear this on Saturday the 29th, then get in your car and go to the Vineyard, Catherine Cornell Theater in Vineyard Haven. There's a peace event with Cindy Sheehan speaking at 8 p.m. Obama saw the protest. This is very important. Think of the subjective impact on Bush of the people across the street in Lafayette Park and the White House at various times. But think now that Obama needs that left cover. Bush, in some ways, could ignore the peace demonstrators. In this case, the Obama motorcade went by Camp Casey. He saw the 20-foot orange sign, and he saw it. Michelle saw it. The kids might have seen it. So there is no vacation for body bags. We'll be back in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley in Washington, D.C. A few more aspects of this exceptionally meritorious protest by Cindy Sheehan on Martha's Vineyard against Butcher Barkey, warmonger Obama. That's all he is. Take the scales off your eyes, as she's inviting you to do. Charles Gibson, the corrupt anchor man of the ABC Nightly Network News, was asked in an interview on WLS Chicago, what do you think of the fact that the peace movement through Cindy Sheehan is now protesting Obama? And after some verbal fumbling and tergiversation, this Gibson, Charles Gibson of ABC News, says, well, enough already. Yeah, enough already, Charlie. Not enough. Not enough while you've got the highest casualty level of any month in the entire history of the Afghan war. It's last month it was a total of 75 dead in the month of July. That is U.S. and NATO, because there's a significant British, Canadian, other contingents. It's about 30 countries altogether that are actually on the ground and are taking losses. It's much more of an international army in the full sense. It's a NATO army. That's what it is. It's a NATO attack on Afghanistan with all these other countries being dragged in, right? And it's all done under the activation of Article 5 of the North Atlantic Treaty of 1949. This was done in the wake of 9/11. So that's this goes straight back to 9/11. The comment by Charles Gibson also ignores that this month in August, we're now coming to the end of August, the losses for the U.S. and probably also for NATO are going to be even higher than they were in July. So we'll have that figure for you next week. But the unmistakable tendency is that the casualty levels in Afghanistan are now approaching the worst phase of the Iraq war. This is also because of the terrain of Afghanistan and because of the strategy or lack thereof. Remember, Afghanistan is the graveyard of empires. The British in the 19th century defeated at great cost, one army almost completely annihilated. The Soviets there in the 1980s and went away with their country in a shambles and their entire political system collapsing. This was the handiwork of Zbigniew Brzezinski. As we know, he hasn't stopped boasting about it since, and he'd like to double down. He'd like to go va-bonk, double or nothing, and attempt to destroy the Russian Federation, too. But that's leading us into another direction. And now, of course, the U.S. is there, and you think, oh, Zbigniew, you're so smart. Didn't you realize it's also going to destroy the U.S.? Well, who knows? Right now, the campaign being developed by the Washington Post and other ruling class Wall Street news organs is that there was too much vote fraud in the Afghan election, that Karzai was reelected, and that this is illegitimate. Now, that, I think, is very ominous. It normally, of course, you know, we know when you have an election, a U.S. puppet gets put back into office in a puppet state election approved by the Carter Center or something like this. The media fall into line and celebrate democracy, right? We've seen that in Iraq. It doesn't matter what really happened. They're going to come out and celebrate democracy, i.e. U.S. imperialism triumphs over whatever opposition there might have been. This time, however, it's different. Now they're yelping about vote fraud. Is Karzai a candidate to become a new Diem? Is he going to meet the fate of President Diem of South Africa in October, November of 1963, right before the Kennedy assassination? It's possible. And if that happens, you know what it is. That is the card of total chaos. We've often stressed in these programs that the goal of U.S. policy in Afghanistan has nothing whatsoever to do with this silly fiction of Al-Qaeda, which is in effect, it's a U.S. Tentacle of power. It's an auxiliary. It's the CIA's Arab Legion, always has been, was founded that way, and we've now got, I think, Sybil Edmonds finally came around and repeated that Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, these were U.S. assets. Well, that's been known for a long time. It's nice to have it confirmed from somebody who was on the inside of the government. But this is now the story. If you try to overthrow Karzai, you're essentially saying that total chaos and confusion, a breakdown of the central government of Afghanistan, even beyond what you have now, is going to be used then to try to put that splinter factor into Pakistan. In other words, promote the collapse of Afghanistan into absolute chaos, Balkanization, warlordism, the breakdown of civilization in every form, and then hope that that spills over into Pakistan. That's at least a possibility to watch. Obama assembled a group of historians at the White House, and they tended towards a consensus in warning Obama that he is now treading the path of Lyndon B. Johnson with his insane Afghanistan adventure, and that if he doesn't want to imitate Lyndon B. Johnson in being forced out of office, I would add, he had better turn that around. Generally speaking, we have a turn of U.S. public opinion on this. It's an ominous turn for Obama. He had run on this, right? And for some reason, even though he was declaredly the biggest warmonger in the campaign, the left libs were so blinded by the dazzle and the sparkle and the thrill of being part of a fused group of Obama bots after so long under Bush, they couldn't hear it. They were simply blind, deaf, and dumb when it came to the actual policies. And most of the time, he didn't talk about actual policies. Here he did. He said, I'm going to bomb Pakistan. That was the one thing he was committed to. And, of course, now he's doing it. So this, I think, is looking very, very bad. Also, notice the Obama administration responding to reports in the Polish press that the Polish missile crisis has been called off, that Obama the Obama regime is going to renounce putting those very, very dangerous missiles right on Russia's doorstep. And, of course, they claim these are anti-ballistic missiles. But what's the guarantee? You're putting missiles there. The target could be something in space or it could be Moscow. How could the Russians know the difference? The Obama regime now hastens to reassure their East European NATO puppet states that the Polish missile crisis is emphatically still on. There will be missiles going into Poland and a radar going into the Czech Republic. The other aspect, of course, of Cindy Sheehan is the absolute moral bankruptcy of large parts of the U.S. Foundation-funded peace movement. We have talked about this in the past, going back 2 or 3 years. The principal factor of corruption, disorientation, dishonesty, and ultimate impotence of the U.S. peace movement. Above all, their refusal to embrace the question of 9/11 truth due to the fact that they were getting money from the foundations. That money has now been cut off, and many of these groups are collapsing. We'll be back in a minute.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Just concerning the bankruptcy, the failure of large parts of the foundation-funded peace movement, who are, of course, committed to supporting Butcher Baalke, to supporting Obama, no matter what he does, because he is, of course, the charismatic messiah, the anointed one, as we know. In other words, the lemming legions, the drooling Obama cultists, the Kool-Aid drinkers. This is concentrated very heavily in foundation-funded peace organizations. Remember, Obama's mother comes from the Ford Foundation. That's the family business. Obama's only employment other than government was foundations. He was a strikebreaker, a community organizer, poverty pimp for the Gamaliel Foundation, the Joyce Foundation, the Woods Fund, the Annenberg Foundation. His friends, Ayers and Dorn, heavily funded by the Annenberg Foundation, the MacArthur Foundation, and so forth. So this is an entire milieu of foundation-funded operatives, provocateurs, agents, mind-benders, machines of social manipulation, social engineering, and so forth. So it's not surprising when you look at the overwhelming foundation funding into the peace movement that so many of these groups have done nothing. Now, interesting article, John V. Walsh. You can see this at Anti-War. Anti-War ignored Cindy, and then they decided Anti-War tried to jump on the Cindy Sheehan bandwagon, trying to do fundraising for themselves using her picture. But the money was not going to go to her. It was going to go to Anti-War. How about that for chutzpah? This article, however, by John V. Walsh, originally from Counterpunch, I believe, gold is where you find it. She says, the silence is deafening. The silence of the anti-war movement is deafening. And after Cindy Sheehan had put down her call to come to Martha's Vineyard and protest the new warmonger as vigorously as you protested the previous warmonger from Crawford, Texas to Martha's Vineyard. So who did not show up? The Nation magazine. Oh, Catherine Vandenhoevel, daughter of the secretary to Wild Bill Donovan of the OSS. The American Friends Service Committee, where are you? Peace Action, where are you? Progressive Democrats of America, where are you? Code Pink, where are you? They're doing Honduras, as we've seen. They think Honduras is the key to the world situation. You got to pick between those two dictators, and if you pick wrong, then you get you don't get the prize. United for Peace and Justice, according to John V. Walsh, one of the largest of these groups, is essentially liquidating itself, shutting down, closing shop. Their contributors are gone, meaning their foundation funding, shriveling up following the thinly veiled protest of the retirement of Leslie Kagan, who had been the resident honcho at United for Peace and Justice. I think this means that she's quitting in protest to what's going on. And, of course, George Soros's own MoveOn.org, which was always against the Iraq war and in favor of the Iraq war. So this is an epiphany. You can see who's who. Who's honest? Who is trustworthy? Who is believable? Who is corrupt? Who is a hypocrite? Who is a shill for the foundations and for Butcher Barkey? Walsh also adds that he called in the New England area American Friends Service Committee, Peace Action, Green Party of Massachusetts, alias Green Rainbow Party, and they did not even respond. Now, again, anti-war piled on, I think, later, a little bit opportunistically. That's fine. Let them do it. Any reason to protest is a good reason. And in terms of the support, there are honest groups. There are people whose names deserve to be recorded as actually interested in peace, not just chills of the Democratic Party. It would be Iraq Veterans Against the War and World Can't Wait. Those groups are actively supporting what Cindy Sheehan is doing this weekend. So again, Obama saw the protest. Remember, Obama's great vulnerability is to attacks coming from his left, attacks coming from the Limbaugh, Hannity, O'Reilly, Newt Gingrich axis, the Austrian school, Friedmanite axis, are not effective against Obama or have limited effect because they tend to reinforce the one thing that he needs, which is left cover. If he's getting attacked by peace activists coming from his left, this hurts Obama more than anything. And indeed, we'll see in just a minute that he has had to start shucking. He's throwing sops to the anti-war movement. I would say it is no coincidence that just as the public support for the Afghan lunatic adventure collapses, just as the military situation, political situation deteriorates, and above all, just when Cindy Sheehan and the anti-war people show up at Martha's Vineyard, we have Holder, Eric Holder, the corrupt and highly politicized Obama associate, the attorney general. Holder says he's going to appoint a special prosecutor to probe not Bush, not Cheney, not you, not Ashcroft, not Gonzalez, not Addington, not any of these neocon monsters who ordered torture. He's going to go after some little fish in the lower echelons of the CIA. Notice it's only the CIA. How about the Army? holder, you know, your man McChrystal, your new commander in Afghanistan, is the guy who set up the network of torture chambers in Iraq. So McChrystal gets off with no problems whatever. It's only the CIA and only the little fish. What is that? We've seen that before. That's a shuck. That's a sop. That's saying to the anti-war movement, look, I'm not as bad as you think. Look what I'm doing. I'm giving you this wonderful special prosecutor. It's a shock and a sop to placate the left libs and to attempt to solidify Obama's collapsing left flank because he does something for this group. Remember, when the LGBT people wanted same-sex marriage rights and Obama was denying it, they threatened not to go to his fundraiser, and he immediately made a concession in their direction. All of you anti-war people and leftists out there, learn the lesson. You don't get anything from Obama by being nice to him. You've got to get very rough. You've got to attack him mercilessly, expose his crimes, his hypocrisy, his Wall Street control, and at the very least, you'll get some small concessions, and that may hopefully encourage you to go on and do bigger and better things, because it shows that he really is vulnerable to attacks coming from the left. So don't be nice, be very rough, and you will get somewhere. Now, let's turn to economics. It is very, very grim. And I get the feeling now we're going into a new downturn. And what I principally mean is the downturn has not is accelerating in terms of the real economy, but even the projection of that into the dizzy realm of stock market speculation. I think this Mugs rally now reaching the outer limits. What are the statistics? According to shadow government statistics, the U.S. now has 21% unemployed. That starts with an official rate of 9.5%. If you go up to, I think it's called U6 of the Labor Department, which is unemployed, underemployed, and presumably people who are in the gray area between looking for a job and not, it gets up to 16%. And if you add in others who have dropped out before, according to shadow government statistics, it's 20.6, I believe, so we'll round that up. 21% unemployment. That is a world economic depression, world trade collapsing. It's also the first time since 1947 that the United States has had a shrinking economy for four quarters, for one entire year. That is to say, you've got to go back to the primary post-World War II demobilization depression of 1947 to find four quarters of down. Fourth quarter 08, minus 5.4%. First quarter 09, minus 6.4%. Second quarter 09, minus 1%. We'll be back in a minute.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. So the official unemployment is 9.5%. The Atlanta Fed comes forward to say, but watch that other Bureau of Labor Statistics data series, the U6, or maybe it's the U8. Anyway, the broadest one that the Labor Department does, that's 16%, 16% unemployment. And when we go over to shadow government statistics and they add in some very obvious corrections for the discouraged workers who have dropped out over time, 21% unemployment. Get that into your head. 21% unemployment. It's a depression, a real one, a real world economic depression. And whenever you talk about economics, don't forget that everything you think or see has to be situated in the context of an all-out world economic depression, breakdown crisis, and disintegration of world finance and economics. And it started with derivatives. It started with deregulation and privatization, just what the Austrians and the Chicago boys called for, the economics of deregulation and privatization leading to derivatives and hedge funds, as well as the abolition of Glass-Steagall. So the four quarterly declines, again, in the fourth quarter of 08, it's down 5.4. Now, these are official GNP statistics, very, very rough, because that includes all the froth of speculation. In the first quarter of 09, down 6.4%. Second quarter of 09, down 1%. So the first time since 1947 that you've got four quarterly declines. The GDP of the United States is now down 4% from the peak reached in mid-2008. Let's look at the immediate vector impulse of the jobless claims. Last week, 580,000 new unemployment claims, 570,000 this week. Now, of course, the Austrians, Dick Armey and company, they don't think there should be any unemployment insurance. Wouldn't that be great? Limbaugh complained when the unemployment numbers came in because all those lazy people are mooching off the public trough, huh? Not like corporate welfare, a rush. Now, the banking system. This is now Sheila Bair, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. This woman should be in jail. She should, today, since it's Friday again, immediately seize J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citibank, Bank of New York Mellon, Wells Fargo, you know the names. The zombie banks should be seized because they're all bankrupt, but they've been declared too big to fail. So the law is suspended. The regulations are suspended. So here's what Sheila has to say. She says the fund available to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation to pay off bank depositors in case a bank blows up into bankruptcy has lost 20% in one quarter. 20% during the second quarter of 09. That is to say they paid out $10.4 billion and they had between $50 and $60 billion to start with. So they're down one-fifth, down 20%. U.S. banks report losses of $3.7 billion in the second quarter. That's very bad because that's now under the reign of mark-to-model. That's not even mark-to-market anymore. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation fund now equals 0.22% of all deposits, way below the legal mandate, which is they're supposed to aim at 1.15%. So they're almost 1% below, well, 1% of total deposits below where they should be at this point. 81 banks have blown during 2009. Many of them have been merged, but 81 banks have gone just in the 8 months now of this year. Two-thirds of 2009 over 81 banks, so you can see we're headed well over 100. There are now 416 problem banks, 416 problem banks with $300 billion of assets. Now, of course, the problem banks don't count the zombie banks that are too big to fail. They don't get counted because the law, once again, has been suspended for them. There is now an emerging consensus that 1,000 banks will blow up over the next 2 years. And I think that's realistic. And again, they should be shut down. Don't wait for a chaotic, ragged crash. Go out there and get them. Now, a couple of interesting pieces of news. U.S. District Judge Loretta Preska in New York City has ruled against helicopter Ben Bernanke of the Federal Reserve, saying that this is now Manhattan, Southern District of New York, the Fed, Bernanke, must divulge the names of those companies who have gotten special 0% lending from the Fed, the various TAF, term auction facility, and you know the names. It's the alphabet soup over at the Fed, the toxic kind of alphabet soup. Not like the New Deal alphabet soup that was good for you. This is the toxic Federal Reserve derivatives-based alphabet soup. TAF, TALF, the AIG, money market funds, there's a million of them. And that's where about $20 trillion has gone. So the Fed is now going to have to divulge the names of those who got this. This comes through an FOIA, Freedom of Information Act by Bloomberg News. They wanted to know who got this money. AIG has admitted that they've gotten it. No way to hide that. Citibank admitted that they got it. So there's a step towards auditing the Fed. Auditing the Fed, fine idea, rather small bore at this point, though. And here's a step towards auditing. Also, the financial regulators of the state of Massachusetts have subpoenaed Goldman Sachs for Huddles. Now, Huddles is where proprietary insider information is leaked to preferred fat cat clients, hedge fund operators, and others of Goldman Sachs. So they get to do high-powered, short-range speculation that the little schmoes are never told about. In other words, the little schmoes are told, buy stock X and hold it, whereas the fat cats are told stock X is going to crash tomorrow. And they say, well, it's the difference between short-term speculating and long-term buy and hold investing. This is essentially Goldman Sachs manipulating the market, because that's what it is. These are basic pools. That's a pool. That's what would have been known in the 1920s as a pool, where you get a pool manager, you talk up a stock, you bid it up, you get it up 20, 30, 40%, and then you sell it all at once, and you dump it on the little Mickeys who are left holding the bag when the stock goes down. That's clearly illegal. So Goldman Sachs, most of these people should be in the clink. They should be in jail. Now, we have interesting comments. This is the world as seen from the retail sector, and I think it's very refreshing. This is a guy called Howard Davidovitz. He is a retail maven. He's an expert in retail trade. Now, here's the Davidovitz. This is better than Nouriel Roubini, better than the Black Swan, better than Krugman, Reich, any of these characters. Howard Davidovitz starts off telling you, retail is terrible, terrible. Hundreds of thousands of stores are going to close. Hundreds of thousands of retail stores. The consumer is heavily leveraged, meaning heavily in debt. And those heavily indebted consumers are now losing their jobs. Therefore, says Howard Davidovitz, the U.S. is in a death spiral. The U.S. economy is in a death spiral. I think this is accurate. And this is from, again, the street level, right? This is from the world of retail sales, which is, as we're always told, two-thirds of this very sick economy. No economy should be two-thirds retail sales, but this one is. So if you want to know what's going to go on, then ask the retail mavens, Howard Davidovitz, leading the pack. Davidovitz says the only companies that are going to do well are the following: Family Dollar, Dollar Tree, and 99-cent stores. So you get the idea. The downscale retailers, the Depression-era retailers, among the department stores, only Kohl's. He believes hundreds of banks will fail. We'll be back in just a minute with more of this very interesting prognosis of the Depression era.